Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Mother Yashoda further told Krishna, "My dear son, because of playing all day, your body has become covered with dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath and cleanse yourself. Today the moon is conjoined with the auspicious star of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows in charity to the Brahmins." Purport. It is a custom of Vedic culture that whenever there is any auspicious ceremony, one should give valuable cows in charity to the Brahmins. Therefore, Mother Yashoda requested Krishna, "Instead of being enthusiastic in playing, now please come and be enthusiastic in charity." Yagyadana tapa karma nachajam karyam evatat, as advised in Bhagavad Gita 18.5. Sacrifice, charity and austerity should never be given up. Yagyodanam tapascheva pavanani manishinam. Even if one is very much advanced in spiritual life, one should not give up these three duties. To observe one's birthday ceremony, one should do something in terms of one of these three items, yagyadana or tapa, or all of them together. Omagyan tamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun malitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namo om Vishnu padai Krishna pistai buddhale shimati bhakti vedanta swami niti namini. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nivisesa Sunyavadi Pascha Tate Shatani Jai Shri Krishna Taitanya Prabhanitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we're continuing this wonderful part of the Bhagavatam about the childhood pastimes of Krishna. When Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys have been playing with each other for quite some time. And Mother Yashoda is getting a little bit concerned, you know, especially because some of the events that have been going on in recent times in Gokul, what with this evil witch Putana turning up with this whirlwind demon, all these unusual events happening, Mother Yashoda is very concerned about her Krishna. So in one commentary by one devotee, they're saying that actually Mother Yashoda had put some watch person out with Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys to just take care that everything's going to be okay with them. But still, she's very concerned because of her love is so strong for Krishna that she just wants to make sure that everything's okay all the time. But Krishna and Balaram, they're having so much fun that nothing is really going to distract them. Everybody who knows children know that when children start playing, there's no stopping. They'll just reach to some furious crescendo of play and then it will still not stop. Even when they're become very hungry and tired, still play will go on. So Mother Yashoda is concerned to try to get them to come back home. So first Mother Rohini tries to call them, but that doesn't work. And then so Mother Yashoda comes and she's trying to call them. She's trying different things. And it said that every time she says something, she's gradually getting closer and closer to them because she knows if she goes too close, they will just run away because they're engaged in playing. They don't want to think about going home to mother at this point. It's the last thing they're thinking about. So first she calls them and says, "You must be so tired and hungry after playing for many hours, and you must be so hungry, so tired." And then she says, "You know, Balaram, you know, you had something to eat earlier this morning, but now you must eat something more, so come back and bring Krishna with you," you know. And then she tries another tactic. She says, "You know, like Nanda Maharaj, he's waiting to eat to take his prasadam, but he can't do it until you come back, so you must come back." And all this time she's getting closer and closer to the boys as she's calling to them. And now in this verse, she's saying, but this is the day, this is your, it seems it's Krishna's birthday. So it's a very auspicious day. And because it's a auspicious day, then you have the responsibility to give charity to the Brahmins. And so now she's appealing to Krishna's sense of responsibility. And this at this point, she will finally get Krishna and Balaram to come with her back home. So one thing is, it seems unusual that Krishna here, he must be about 3 years old, something like that, 3-4 years old. But yet, we can see that he's already got such responsibilities. He understands these responsibilities of giving charity to the Brahmins, to take care of the cows and everything. Such a big responsibility. But after all, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so this is suitable activity for himself. Does anybody know the name of the auspicious star of Krishna's birth? Rohini, yeah, that's right. It's mentioned in Krishna book as well. So this Rohini is actually this nakshatra. This nakshatras are like the lunar mansions. So when the moon does its orbit around the earth, it passes the horizon that it passes through. There are 27 nakshatras. And this was the original Vedic way of understanding the circumstances of a person. So, you know, I'm not going to say anything more about it, but you can check out yourself what the Rohini nakshatra suggests, and you'll be quite intrigued by that. And at the same time, you can look at your own nakshatra and maybe discover something about your own self. But of course, this is Krishna. He's playing his part as a human. So he is the source of all of this, of all the intelligence in creation, of all these nakshatras. He's the source of it all, but because he's playing his pastime, he chooses his own personal nakshatra. So that's quite interesting. And then Srila Prabhupada, to enhance the whole, this beautiful vision of this Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys playing together, Srila Prabhupada gives his reference to this Bhagavad Gita verse in 18.5. Which is very interesting. Because even no matter how much fun Krishna was having, he was willing to give it up just because of his responsibility for giving charity. And so this verse that Prabhupada quotes, this Yagyadana Tapakarma Nachajam Karyam Evatat, so sacrifice, charity, and austerity should never be given up. And even if one is very much advanced in spiritual life, we should never give up these three duties. And so we should be prepared to follow the Supreme Lord's example. So whatever happens, we shouldn't give up sacrifice, charity, and penance. So we all know that to give up something, we have to give up something to be able to receive another thing. As humans, we're very simple and very limited. For example, if I'm lying in bed in the morning and I wake up, then I have to get actually up out of that bed before I can do something else. I have to renounce the bed. I have to give it up, leave it behind, however difficult that might be. And believe me, at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's quite something. I've got it down to a perfect art. Another example might be, say, we're taking prasadam. Say we've got a samosa in one hand. We're enjoying the samosa, but we want to take a drink of something. So we must renounce the samosa before we can drink something. We have to give it up. So we're always in our life, where we have to give one thing up to receive another thing. And people in the world, even like professional businessmen, sports people, they know about the value of renouncing something, you know, whatever that renouncing might be. If a sportsman, to be at the top of his game, he has to, before he plays that game, he has to renounce certain things because it's like a science. To be able to perform at the peak, he has to renounce certain things. Same as with very successful business people. They know that they have to renounce certain things to be able to do what they do. It's a whole science. But quite often in the new age, sort of like ideas now, this idea of renunciation comes in, but mainly it's for, you know, personal, raising your personal energy and raising your personal happiness, so you renounce something. But that's not the full conclusion given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. It's only part of it. So that missing part is what most people are missing. And because, you know, like, because renunciation is really, it's such a central part of Bhagavad Gita. Because, of course, Arjuna, he wanted to renounce the battle. He wanted to just leave it all behind and just go away from it. But Krishna was persisting in educating Arjuna about what renunciation really is, because he could see that Arjuna was not really understanding what renunciation was. And of course, Arjuna is doing that for our benefit as well, so that we can receive this this Bhagavad Gita and understand really what real renunciation is. And also Krishna's teaching about liberation. So if we want liberation, naturally we have to renounce. If we want to receive liberation, we have to leave certain things behind. So that's our whole philosophy, really. But Krishna uses two words, chag and sannyas. It's quite interesting, because chag really means abandoning something or giving something up. So that's the common understanding of what renunciation is. You just give it up, leave it behind. You just renounce the world. You go to the mountains. You go into a cave. You just go there, get away from everything, get on with your so-called spiritual life, and everything will be fantastic. But we know that that's not the case, because we need to always have activity in our life. So very, very difficult to perform that kind of austerity. Of course, it was possible in the Vedic age, but not now. But and this word chag is also used in many different ways. For example, in Gita, when it says janma karma chame divyam evam yo viti tatvata chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. So one who knows my transcendental nature and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take birth again. So this chaktva deham, that comes from this root of chag, so giving up the body, basically. Then also in 16th chapter Gita, when Krishna mentions about the three gates leading to hell, so lust, anger, and greed. So also in, because by giving up lust, anger, and greed, we should, because they lead to degradation of the soul. So in that verse it says, tasmadeta trayam chajet. So these should be given up. So chajet, again coming from chag, so this idea of just giving up. But then in the 18th chapter, Krishna's giving his final conclusions on the subject of you know, renunciation and chag. So he's saying, to give up the result of all activities is called chag by the wise, and that estate is called the renounced order of life, or sannyas, by great learned men. So the conclusion is, that giving up the result of all activities is actually, this is what we should really be abandoning. It's not just giving up the activity, but giving up the results of the activity, you know. And so doing activity for expecting results, that should be given up. But any activity which will lead to advancing in spiritual knowledge, that should not be given up. So then he says this So any acts of sacrifice, charity, and austerity, they should not be given up at all. Indeed, acts of charity, sacrifice, and penance, they purify even the great souls. So even a great sannyasi, he should not give up sacrifice. So traditionally, the sacrificial fire, the yagya, he should not give that up, but he should give up any results of his activities. So it's very interesting. Of course, traditionally the brahmacharis would perform sacrifice, the householders, grihasthas, they perform charity, and the vanaprasthas and sannyasis would perform penance and austerity. So these are given by the Supreme Lord. These are ways by which we can advance in spiritual life. This is great wisdom. So these activities should be performed as a matter of duty. In fact, so yeah, you could say that for the brahmacharis, sacrifice, we should understand, this idea that you are offering everything to Krishna, not just brahmacharis, but all, because we're all supposed to be brahmacharis, all three brahmacharis, grihasthas, sannyasi, everyone's supposed to be a brahmachari, we're supposed to follow that. But for example, everybody should be offering all the food that we take, that should be offered to Krishna. It's like a sacrifice, it's like in a small austerity, that Krishna should be put in the center of everything. Then the householders should offer charity, either supporting the temples financially or supporting people in renounced order, or inviting people off the street to eat at their homes, because they can do it, because householders are actually working and bringing in Lakshmi, so they can do that. And then, of course, the vanaprastha stage in sannyasi, it's all about penance and austerity, just giving up, reaching the end of life, the end of days, just give it all up, offer everything to Krishna. Practice increasing fasting, increasing chanting, increasing time reading. So these three things, sacrifice and charity and austerity, should never be given up. But yet Krishna's giving up his play with all his friends, one of his favorite things. He's giving that up just because it's his birthday, so he should be offering charity to the Brahmins. He should be giving cows to the Brahmins on this day. So he's willing to give it up. So should we. So we're all naturally attracted by Krishna's pastimes because they make us very joyful, very happy. But that's because we're all parts of Krishna, we're all parts and parcels of Krishna, spiritual sparks. So jivera svarupahoi krishnera nichadas krishnera tatasta shakti beda beda prakash. So yamsa kirna yaichi agni jvala choi. So because it's a living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because we are the marginal energy of Krishna, and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from Krishna, just like a molecular particle of sunshine or a molecular particle of fire. So we hear this when Sanatana Goswami, he's asking Mahaprabhu, so who am I? Kami, who am I? What, this is just the best of questions, who am I? And Mahaprabhu then proceeds to speak about this. He says, well, you're a pure living entity. You're neither that gross body made of earth, air, fire, water, ether, nor are you that subtle body made of the mind, intelligence, and ego. You're not that. But you're a spirit soul, eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore eternally his servant, eternally the Lord's servant. Also, you belong to Krishna's marginal potency. So they have the two worlds, the material world and the spiritual world. But we're situated between the two of them. But yet we have a relationship with both. Therefore, we're marginal potency. We can go either direction. We can move towards the material or we can move towards the spiritual. It's our choice. And we're related with Krishna, one with and yet different from him, simultaneously one and different. Because we're a spirit soul, we're the same in quality as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we're a very minute particle of spirit, we're very different from him. So therefore, one with and different. And examples of that are like a small particle of sunshine. You have the great vast sun, huge massive energy, but you have a tiny particle of sunshine, that comparison. Or you have a raging fire and a tiny particle of fire, like a spark or something. That's the relation. That's how we can understand it. So going by this, if we're true to our nature, then we can be in the spiritual world just by being very simple and fully surrendered in love to Krishna. But we're not, because we're here in the material world since time immemorial. We're actually, at least myself, like lost souls, sort of like deeply conditioned by that long karmic journey through material world, through the cycle of samsara again and again and again, through millions of births and millions of different bodies. So we can assume that we're here because at some point we dropped that love with Krishna, like we see here the cowherd boys, everyone in the spiritual world sharing with Krishna around his love. But at some point we must have dropped that and desired it for ourselves. I mean, I know there are different ideas about whether we have actually dropped from the spiritual world or whether it's just that we've been conditioned since time immemorial and we haven't yet been to the spiritual world. But I certainly don't have an answer for that. But just in Srila Prabhupada's often speaking in this way, that actually we have fallen at some point, even if that point is since time immemorial, even many creations ago, at some point we're separate. So, seems like at some point in that way we made a wrong choice, at some point, a wrong decision. But that decision would lead us to this experience that we're now having. So in one sense we can relate this verse to ourselves. And from Krishna's point of view, if Krishna's pure love and pure compassion that we can't even begin to comprehend, and it's like he's saying to us, he's created this material world for us. And he said, you've been playing all day long, like since time immemorial in this material world. Your body's become covered by the dust and the dirt of that long karmic journey. You've been taking on millions of lifetimes, millions of different identities. Millions of different identities, but yet none of them are you. You were not satisfied in any of these lifetimes. So now you're covered in all this like karmic dirt from playing around in the material world. But now, just come back to me, you know. Take your cleansing bath, become purified and return back home. Yes. So that's what jumped out at me when I first read this verse. And because Krishna is so compassionate, he's saying, if you want to experience then being that supreme enjoyer and controller, then go to the material world and do it there. But you can't do it here in the spiritual world, because everyone in the spiritual world is purely, deeply in love with Krishna and everything to do with him, and is completely surrendered. No personal agenda whatsoever. But for that living entity who had that tiny, tiny desire to experience that for himself, then Krishna is saying, okay, then go to the material world. And Krishna has created the material world so that we can have that. But so that we can actually be in that illusion that we are the enjoyer and controller. So compassionate is. But there's only one problem. That when we get to the material world, it's not just us. It's not just us who are trying to be the enjoyer and controller. There's millions and billions of other living entities who are also trying to be the enjoyer and the controller. So that's a bit of a problem, because there's a bit of competition then, a bit of competition there. Because not everyone could be the supreme, so it's like a bad career choice, you know, it was a bad move. Because everyone else wants that little bit of space, everybody else wants that freedom, everybody else wants that nice wife, nice girlfriend, nice car, nice dog, nice cat, you know, whatever it is, everybody else wants it. And so it stirs up all sorts of emotions which are not really very helpful for our spiritual life. It stirs up all this lust, anger, greed, and envy. Everything comes to the surface, and we just end up even more conditioned than we were in the first place. So it's not such a great situation. Yeah. So we have become really covered with the dirt and grime of the material world in a long journey. So it said every living entity is actually born into delusion. So we're overcome by all the dualities of desire and hate. It completely overpowers us. The actual living entity, the essence, the spirit soul itself, is not touched at all by any of it. But because the coverings are so powerful, the mind and becomes disturbed, and the intelligence, and driven by the false ego, this desire to lord it over this material nature. And then we're in this realm of the modes of nature, these three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But as soon as these three become mixed together, they become nine. As soon as those nine become mixed, they become 81, and so on and so on. So that delusional aspect of the modes of nature becomes infinite. It's so powerful. And all the time it's determining our state of consciousness. So each life becomes like a fairground ride. You know, we just come in at first. It's quite new and interesting. There's some movement that seems quite interesting. But then the ride gets faster, slowly faster and faster and faster. A bit more chaotic. We start to lose track of things. At first, everything seems okay, not so bad. And then during this great ride, there's at times is great fun as well. We're allotted our happiness, our certain amount of happiness we can have. But at times also, it's very horrible. At times we're saying, God, I could stay here forever and do this is great. You know, I hope it goes on forever. But it doesn't. And at times we're saying, this is so horrible, such a horrible experience. Just get me off of here. Get me out of here. And then that fairground ride, at some point it starts to slow down. And at the end, death comes. It's all taken away. And then we start over again. So how long does it take before we learn? And what does it take for us to learn? So there's a nice verse in Srimad Bhagavatam from Lord Shabadev. He says, Nunam pramata kurate vikarma yadindriya prati apranoti nasadumanya yata atmano yam asanapi desit asanapi kleshida asadeha. So one who can... When a person considers sense gratification to be the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he's already received a body which, although temporary, is actually the cause of his present misery. But actually the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he's been given a material body for sense gratification. So therefore I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So this is Lord Rishabhadev speaking to his 100 sons, such great wisdom. He's just saying this, you know, the whole thing, just taking another body one after another, just to try and get some sense pleasure. But actually, so the body we have is a result of our previous life's activities, and our state is the result of our previous activities. So it's, we're always suffering one way or another. This is it. But then, one day, you know, out of the blue, something happens, you know. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that when a person just, all this gets too much, you know, the pleasure and pain, it just gets too much in someone's life. At some particular lifetime, someone just stops and starts to ask, actually, who am I? You know, what am I doing here? Where have I come from? Then when he starts to ask those questions, then the Lord within the heart, Super Soul, Paramatma, he starts to live more fully in that living entity's existence. And he has compassion on that living entity. And he says, finally, you know, this living entity, he's finally starting to ask sensible questions, you know, he's finally starting to inquire about the meaning of life. And so he reciprocates, and he reciprocates from within and from without. From within, knowledge starts to come in the heart by how we can understand, make sense of all of this. And from outside, somebody will come into our life. And if we're very fortunate, that somebody will be a great spiritual teacher or a spiritual master. It's like we sing every morning in Nrsinga, Bahir Nrsinga, Hir Dei Nrsinga. So Bahir Nrsinga, the Lord outside of us, and Hir Dei Nrsinga, the Lord within. That's how he's working. So someday something happens in someone's life. It might be in a big way, and it might be in a very subtle way, but it's an awakening. So I know in my life there was one, I hope you don't mind me telling this story, but there was one occasion. I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I was just playing in a forest. There was an old abandoned car, an old rusty car, so I decided to just... playing around, just jump on the roof of the car. But immediately when I did that, there was a sound like a huge helicopter arriving, and suddenly the sky went really black, and I just like, what's going on now? And then it was actually, there'd been a huge wasp's nest inside the car, on the roof of the car on the inside. So suddenly it was like, must have been a big one, because there were thousands of them. And suddenly just this huge sound, and the sky like dark with all these suddenly thousands and thousands and thousands of wasps going around. And at that point, I just thought I could see like my whole existence and probably a few previous existences as well, because I thought, this is it, it's finished, it's all over, I'm gone, you know. And then, you know, I can still sort of remember like the emotions of that time, because I really thought, well, that's it, it's over. Because there was nobody else around. I was with my family, they were all miles away by this point, in the middle of nowhere. So, and then I can actually remember, first of all, like praying to God, because I was aware of God at that time already, and saying, like, I'm just, you know, and I realized I'm just such an idiot, you know, such a fool, so such an empty kind of person. It's all about me. I don't really care about anything or anyone else. I mean, it's all just flashed in front of my eyes. And then also I started to, natural instinct to try and contact the leader of the wasps. You know, I thought I better like try and find that personality. So you're looking for that personality. So it's kind of like, I was saying, okay, I won't panic, I'll just stay kind of calm. But then I noticed that they weren't attacking me, you know. After some moments, they were still not attacking. So I thought, okay, you know, and sorry, you know, King of the Wasps or Queen of the Wasps, whatever, I'm sorry, you know, for disturbing you, but I'd like to just sort of continue with my life, you know, if I could, if it's okay with you, kind of thing. It's a very powerful experience, but it really just woke me up, you know. It's like everything, I just saw so much of my situation. And actually, I got to the point, I said, okay, so I was standing on the roof of a car with all these thousands and thousands of wasps just going around but not attacking. And then I thought, well, I have to, how do I go, where do I go from here? I have to go somewhere. I have to get off of this car roof and try and go back out into the so-called normal world. So then I said, okay, please, King or Queen of the Wasps, can I just, I'm going to step off the car now and go in my way, you know. And I just, is it okay? So then I just did. I just stepped off the car and walked away, and I didn't even get stung once. So I put that down to, I think that was a super soul moment. If there was ever a super soul moment, I think it was. So I felt like very protected by that. So of course, hopefully it doesn't happen like that to anyone else. But that's how the super soul is reciprocating with us. I also remember when I was working in China, I'd rediscovered the Bhagavad Gita, I was chanting. I still hadn't really met devotees yet. But Krishna was putting things there because he knew what would attract me. Like I was in China, I used to visit all the temples. And because I'd been reading the Bhagavad Gita and just my consciousness was becoming purified. One temple, one day, I walked in this very remote area in China. And there was one deity. It was like a threefold bending form playing a flute in the middle of this Chinese Buddhist temple, and I'd never seen that anywhere else. Just so immediately I was stunned, and I spent a long time there. So it's almost like, you know, that was being shown to me to kind of get me interested, to get me to step out of my life of darkness, kind of thing. So when we take one step towards Krishna, obviously he's taking many more towards us, because he wants us to return, get out of this dirt and dust of the material world and this karmic horror show, and just return to him. So Brahmanda Brahmita Kohan Bhagavana Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So there are millions of living entities, all conditioned by this material nature, all wandering around in the different planetary systems, sometimes higher systems, sometimes lower ones, all in different bodily forms. But among those millions and billions of living entities, one who's very fortunate will meet a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna, and through that come to the understanding of what devotional service is. So actually it's quite rare. And then by discharging that devotional service, by actually performing devotional service under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, one will develop love of Godhead. And when that love of Godhead or Krishna Prem is awakened, then he can become a devotee of that seemingly inconceivable God, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person is considered extremely fortunate. So we should all consider ourselves extremely fortunate and continue with this preaching mission to try and give this to others any way possible. We can't really know how that works, but just by giving the holy name, by giving Srila Prabhupada's books, it can cause a change in a person's life, a living entity's life. Not necessarily that it'll be directly from the book, but maybe it will awaken something. Somebody else will turn up in that person's life and give them something which will allow them to progress. You know, the work of a teacher is always, it's like this zone of proximal development. So the teacher is always, he's aware of the level of a student and he sets tasks which he knows will challenge the student a little bit, but not fry him out completely, but just bring him forward little by little. So someone will turn up in somebody's life and cause some kind of small difference. So it's, there's a Bengali saying that the Lord has 10 hands, meaning that if with the Lord's 10 hands, if he wants to take something away from us, then with his 10 hands he can easily do it. With our 2 hands we can't stop him doing it. But if he wants to bestow some great mercy or benediction upon us, he'll give it with his all 10 hands. And we can hardly begin to receive it with our 2 hands. But still, whatever we do receive is enough to inspire us onwards to try and go deeper into the chanting of his holy names and try to just understand. Even though there's a stage of, we're still sort of like 1 foot in the material world, 1 in the spiritual world, still it can be very difficult dealing with other devotees because we're all a little bit still materially conditioned. But we have to just practice this tolerance, be tolerant and patient. And always, one thing I learned from a Bhakti Vaibhav class last Sunday, Bhakti Pravav Maharaj, he said at one point, he said, we must learn to think that I am the observer of the reactions of my past deeds. So actually everything that's happening to me, I should just observe what's happening to me in my life and realize that that's reactions of my past deeds. And also there's, you know, the Lord's mercy is there, and the Lord's mercy has taken away some of the worst reactions of those past deeds. But still, that's what I'm observing. So when I think I'm having difficulty with other individuals, other devotees, we should really not just this idea of being tolerant and patient, but understanding that actually I don't really know what's going on in that dynamic, but I should be able to see that actually it's coming from myself, really. It's really coming from myself. So then I should notice that, observe that, and just try and learn from it and try to surrender, give up everything that's not useful, and persist in trying to increase everything that is useful, increasing our spiritual consciousness on the path back home, back to Godhead. So Hare Krishna.